Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. We finished the April-May 2025 edition of the print magazine. So today I'm going to be reading articles from the online edition of the Smithsonian Magazine. They're all dated May 2025. So I hope you enjoy the program. Our first article is titled, Why Have Birds Never Gotten As Big as T-Rex? Even the most massive birds have never reached the sizes of their dinosaur relatives. It's by special correspondent Riley Black. Evolution has a fondness for big birds. During the past 66 million years, repeated on different continents and islands all over the world, avian dinosaurs have reached prodigious sizes and even become apex predators in their ancient habitats. 10-foot-tall elephant birds strutted across Madagascar until 1,000 years ago. The sharp-beaked terror birds of prehistoric South America were formidable carnivores for tens of millions of years. And the nearly 7-foot-tall, nut-cracking Diatryma strutted through ancient forests of western North America in search of ripe fruit and nutritious seeds 45 million years ago. Such enormous birds almost seem like a return to the Mesozoic days of giant feathery dinosaurs, which raises the question of whether such avians could ever reach Tyrannosaurus rex sizes. The repeated evolution of huge birds is part of the dinosaurian legacy. Beaked birds are the only dinosaurs to have survived the asteroid-triggered mass extinction at the end of the Cretaceous. Avians like the 6-foot-tall Paleodiptes that waddled across ancient Antarctica about 30 million years ago, and Titanus, a towering carnivore that was the only terror bird to live in North America between 1.8 million and 5 million years ago, underscore that prodigious were not only relegated to the times of Stegosaurus and Trisopterus. The conditions that allowed birds to evolve to large size over and over again have varied from case to case, however, and the process has left a lingering question. If birds possess the traits that opened the possibility of truly giant, multi-ton statures of non-avian dinosaurs, why have we not seen a bird the size of a T-Rex? Often framed as laboratories of evolution, islands can provide some insight into the aviary of big birds our planet continues to host. In a 2023 study, ornithologist Raquel Ponte of Portugal's University of Porto and colleagues looked at the influence of the island rule in birds. The hypothesis contends that on relatively isolated island environments, large species often become smaller and small species become larger. The phenomenon is often attributed to a lack of large, hungry predators like big cats or dogs, allowing island species to evolve in different ways than if ever-hungry predators were influencing island ecology. Birds can get big, in other words, in the absence of predators eating eggs, chicks, and even flightless adult birds that can't simply fly off to escape. The varied moa species of ancient New Zealand, the enormous elephant birds of Madagascar, and even the recently extinct dodo of Mauritius are all examples of what can happen when birds settle in on islands. When a species colonizes a new environment where there are no predators or competitors, as well as new resources and food availability, the species is free to evolve toward optimal sizes and shapes, Ponte says. One common trend she and her colleagues noticed is that island-dwelling birds not only tend to become larger than their mainland counterparts, but also evolve longer legs and rounder wings. Both traits are connected to spending more time on the ground and a shift away from migrating by flying, only possible because of the absence of predators eager to pick off birds that spend too much of their time foraging, nesting, and moving around on the ground. A landmass does not have to be entirely devoid of predatory animals to foster the evolution of big birds, however. We know that in the past, large birds evolved alongside large avian predators, says ornithologist Hanneke Meijer of the University of Bergen in Norway. The large flightless moas of New Zealand evolved about 17 million years ago, but between 600 to a million years ago, they lived alongside the huge Haas eagle. The abundance of the large birds, perhaps even allowing such a predator to evolve. The important thing, Meijer notes, is that big birds tend to evolve in habitats with plenty of ecological possibility. Isolation on an island without large carnivores can open plenty of possibilities for birds, but so can living on larger land masses where resources are abundant and predators are few. Big fossil birds, such as Diatryma, for example, lived among vast forests around 50 million years ago, when mammal carnivores were small and didn't have as strong an influence on the prehistoric landscape. The fearsome terror birds of South America certainly benefited from such opportunity. The continent was a giant island between 2.7 million and 66 million years ago, where the biggest mammalian predators ranged from weasel size to about as big as a leopard, around 100 pounds. Isolated in South America without competition from large mammalian carnivores, terror birds were able to evolve into a variety of predatory niches, including apex predators, says Indiana University Bloomington paleontologist Thomas LaBarge. The carnivorous birds, like the mammals, evolved into a broad array of sizes among coexisting species, undoubtedly with different prey preferences and niches. Whether on islands today or larger continents during prehistory, big birds evolved wherever such flightless giants could peck out a niche for themselves. Tall birds, called maherings, nicknamed demon ducks by some, lived on the island continent of Australia between 30,000 and 25 million years ago. And even on ancient North America, which was more connected to Eurasia during the past 66 million years, large birds like Diatryma lived between 55 million years ago. The pattern, Ponte notes, suggests that in habitats vacated by large hungry predators, the easiest thing for some birds to do was get big and not fly. In each of these cases, it appears that birds grew to large sizes relatively quickly, during times that predatory mammals and birds of prey were either rare or absent. We often look to islands where we see all this crazy experimentation happening due to islands being smaller and isolated, like an evolutionary pressure cooker. But it can happen on the mainland too, Measure notes, just less often and probably more slowly. Despite how often big birds have evolved, however, none have reached the heights or masses of the non-avian dinosaurs that thrived between 66 million and 232 million years ago. For flying birds, the lack of airplane-sized birds, like the monster in the 1957 creature feature, the Giant Claw, can be explained by constraints around flight. Flying is an energy-intensive behavior that requires more and more muscle power the bigger an organism gets, to the point that a flying creature can only become so massive before it's grounded. Flightless birds, however, are another story. At least two factors have allowed dinosaurs, including birds, to evolve to a wide range of sizes. Paleontologists have proposed that air sacs emanating from the respiratory systems of many dinosaurs surrounded and invaded their bones, which allowed their skeletons to be lighter without sacrificing strength, with the bonus of helping the animals breathe more efficiently. Egg laying, too, has been cited as a critical factor in gigantism. Laying eggs, rather than gestating offspring inside, freed dinosaurs from having to carry bigger and bigger babies for longer terms, as elephants and other large mammals do. Birds retain both these traits from their dinosaur ancestors, yet they have never equaled their largest extinct relatives in size. Even though air sacs and eggs are important contributing factors to giant dinosaur size, these biological quirks removed barriers rather than required bodies to get bigger. In a post-Cretaceous world, birds have likely never experienced sufficient evolutionary pressure to be as tall or as massive as T. rex. Perhaps predatory birds like terror birds could have grown larger, Majir notes, as being bigger would have allowed them to catch, kill, and consume a broader array of prey. But apparently no such evolutionary interaction took place to boost their size further. In fact, a 2023 study suggests that terror birds were stamping on and kicking prey smaller than themselves, rather than going after large animals like giant sloths and armadillos of prehistoric South America, perhaps limiting how large they eventually became. Nevertheless, some impressively big birds roamed our planet. Based on recent finds in South America, LaBarge notes, paleontologists know that terror birds that were at least 10% larger than the giant 10-foot-tall kelican lived on the continent. It's unlikely that terror birds got much larger, given that available prey was mostly small, LaBarge says. But I will say that the largest terror birds absolutely ventured into the size of and weight range of some non-avian theropods. The largest terror birds may have been even larger than the biggest birds of all time. If there is any possibility for tyrannosaur-sized birds, the avians will have to evolve during some future time. With more than 11,000 species of living birds on Earth now, feathery creatures alive today will almost certainly give rise to future giants as our planet continues to change. The only question is how large they may become, a potential outcome in what birds remind us is a persistent and still unfolding age of dinosaurs. And that completes the article. The title was Why Have Birds Never Gotten As Big as T-Rex? By Riley Black, a science correspondent. The next article is titled Spanish Shipwreck Reveals Evidence of Earliest Known Pet Cats to Arrive in the United States. The two felines, one adult, one juvenile, appear to have been cared for by the sailors before the vessel sank in a hurricane in 1559, according to a new study. It's by Sarah Kuta, a Daily correspondent. Cats are beloved members of many families, with 73.8 million of them prowling and purring their way around 42 million American households. But it wasn't always this way. Domestic cats are relatively newcomers to the Americas, having only arrived roughly 500 years ago with European explorers. Now, a new study is offering even more insight into the history of these four-legged felines. Researchers have discovered the remains of two house cats in a 466-year-old Spanish shipwreck near Florida, which are likely the earliest known cats in the United States. They describe their findings in a new paper published in the journal American Antiquity. The remains were found among the wreckage of the Emmanuel Point II, a Spanish ship that sank in September 1559 near what is now Pensacola, Florida. The vessel was one of 11 ships that had sailed north from Mexico during an expedition under the command of Tristan de Luna y Ayelaro. The conquistador's fleet was anchored near the Spanish settlement of Santa Maria de Ochus when a hurricane swept through, causing six of the vessels to sink and another to be driven inland. Between 1992 and 2016, researchers discovered three of the expedition's shipwrecks. Divers have successfully recovered several artifacts from the ships, including fragments of jars that likely contained olive oil, wine, or water. Additionally, they've discovered the remains of several critters, including cockroaches, rats, and at least two domestic cats. For the new study, scientists took a closer look at the feline remains, which belonged to one adult and one juvenile cat. Though the cats may have been stowaways, they were likely brought on board intentionally to keep rodents at bay. Along the way, they probably also became chummy with the sailors. Their friendliness with the crew seems to have paid off. Tests suggest the adult cat was mainly eating fish and meats like pork, poultry, and beef. Although it may have hunted the occasional rat or mouse, a significant proportion of the cat's diet came from other sources, the researchers write in the paper. The sailors may have fed the cats because they were so effective at controlling pests that there were none left for them to eat. Or they may have tossed the cats lots of food scraps out of affection, the researchers write. Sailors often considered cats to be lucky, especially those with extra toes. Their primary role may have been as commensal ratters and mousers that kept the onboard rodent population in check, the researchers write. This does not, however, preclude the possibility that these cats were well-liked and cared for by the sailors. The dietary findings also likely rule out other possibilities, such as that the cats were brought on the ship to serve as food for the sailors, or were being raised for their fur. These appear to have been relatively common uses for cats in some parts of medieval Europe, the researchers note in the paper. A Spanish cookbook from 1560 includes a recipe for roasted cat, while cat skeletons from medieval sites across Europe often bear cut marks, suggesting they were skinned for their furs or butchered for their meats, writes IFL Sciences' Tom Hale. Fortunately, that does not seem to be the case here. Scholars think cats were first domesticated in the Middle East roughly 12,000 years ago. By around 400 BCE, they had spread throughout the Mediterranean region. The first cats to travel to the Americas may have sailed on Christopher Columbus's ships, though the animals are not mentioned in the voyage's records. Archaeologists have discovered cat remains in present-day Haiti, where Columbus landed in 1492. But since the explorer never set foot on the mainland of North America, the first cats likely arrived via other expeditions, like the one led by Luna Le Arillo. Genetic testing confirmed the cats aboard the Emmanuel Point II had European ancestry. And that's the end of the article. The title was Spanish Shipwreck Reveals Evidence of Earliest Known Pet Cats to Arrive in the United States, by Sarah Kuta. This article's title is London Zoo Discovers Hundreds of Old Film Reels Featuring Zoo Oddities and Animal Celebrities, by Sonia Anderson. The archives of the Zoological Society of London, or ZSL, hold countless intriguing artifacts, including souvenir soaps shaped like polar bears, an ostrich egg from the 1930s, and, as employees recently discovered, more than 200 mysterious film reels. Now officials are looking for experts to help digitize the fragile rolls. Employees of the Wildlife Conservation Organization, which runs the London Zoo, have been sifting through storage rooms, searching for interesting items to mark its upcoming bicentennial. As Tina Campanella, ZSL's Bicentenary Project Manager, tells the Associated Press, "We have no idea what is on these incredible old canisters, which range from between the 1960s to the 1990s. There are clues as to what could possibly be on them, but very cryptic clues," Campanella adds. "One of them here, it just says, Zoo Oddities. I have no idea what that could be. Then we have giant panda mating. So maybe we take a deep breath before we watch that one." As ZSL archivist Natasha Wakely tells the AP, "The archive is vast and fascinating, as you can expect for an organization that's been running for 200 years. But one thing we were really missing was footage, and that's why this project to digitize our film reels is really exciting." In 1826, British colonial official Stamford Raffles founded ZSL, which opened the London Zoo a few years later. The zoo established the world's first reptile house and aquarium in the mid-1800s. In 1962, ZSL lent an endangered Arabian oryx named Caroline to a herd in Phoenix, Arizona, marking the first international cooperative breeding program. The Zoological Society also has a rich broadcasting history. In the 1950s, the BBC was filming two ZSL zoologists in Sierra Leone for the channel's ZooQuest program when the team hit a snag. one of the zoologists had fallen ill. That's when a producer named David Attenborough stepped in as presenter. The program marked the first television appearance of the world-renowned naturalist. The newly discovered film reels were likely shot around the same time that ZSL was collaborating with major broadcasters to make a program called Zoo Time, writes Miles Kempton, a zoology historian at the University of Cambridge, in a blog post for ZSL. We think most of these reels came from the 1950s and 60s, the decades that saw the birth of natural history television, spearheaded by the Zoological Society of London's groundbreaking work with the BBC and ITV. Kempton says, in a statement, some of the reels may have been broadcast, while others may have been used as educational tools, as Campanella says in a video. Without the skill or the expertise or the kits to digitize them, the ZSL team is looking for experts to help. And with that, we have run out of time today. You've been listening to the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I've been reading from the online edition of the Smithsonian since we had already finished the April-May issue of the printed magazine. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to the premium programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona on a 24/7 basis. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.